This February, Jackson Lucas celebrates Black History Month on the Beyond the Resume podcast by revisiting some of our best interviews. These African-American leaders, pioneers, and industry titans have inspiring stories that hold tremendous value to this day. On behalf of all of us at Beyond the Resume, we hope you enjoyed these throwbacks. Thank you for listening.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the TBG, this episode of the TBG Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Chris Papa, and my co-host, Mickey the Mick Penzer. Hi, Mickey.
Hi.
Our guest today, very happy to have Gerard Delane. He's the Director of Development of Carthage Advisors in New York City. How you doing, Gerard?
I'm well. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm in San Mateo, California, in our little workspace here. And you guys are both in New York, right?
Yes, in negatives. Feels like negative degrees outside. I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's freezing out there. I'm so happy I'm here. So, Gerard, why don't you tell us a little bit about Carthage?
So we're a small development firm based out of Harlem that its original mission was to preserve and create affordable housing. And we still largely do that. So creating a workforce and affordable housing in the New York City area. We also do some market rate development as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, Gerard and I have known each other for a number of years as well. We were talking before we recorded that we, 8 or 9 years ago, we spoke a little bit. It's been a while, so it's good to see you again. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Miami, Florida, actually.
Okay. How did you get this real estate bug?
So went to undergrad at Florida A&M School of Architecture, which is in Tallahassee, Florida. After getting my undergraduate degree in architecture, I moved to Orlando.
Why did you get into architecture?
You know, I've
just, it's hard. It's not an easy major.
I always loved buildings, man. Always. So long story short, when I was about 6 years old, I drew a house for my mom and I said, hey, mom, here's your dream house. And she said, oh, I love it. And I said, who does this? She said, architects. And I said, I want to be an architect. So from my
dad
on, all the way through college, wow, that was like my sole focus.
You built a lot of Legos as a kid? You built a lot of Legos?
Oh, yeah.
You built a lot of Legos?
Drawing, art, you know, you name it. I used to do all that stuff. Took classes.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, all the above. But when I got into my first job, I got about 2 or 3 years into working. I was working at this really cool firm in Central Florida. It's called Forum Architecture and Interior Design, and it focused on multifamily. So it did, you know, market rate housing, affordable housing, resorts, hotels, you know, you name it. And I was in the affordable housing group, so I ended up looking at a lot of affordable housing deals and dealing with a lot of affordable housing developers. And this developer came in one time, and like, I was just amazed. You walked in, he was like, all right, here's the site. Here's how tall the building to build. Here's how many units I want. Here's how many one beds. Here's how many two beds. Here's the rents I think I can get for it. I think the construction will cost this amount. Here's the type of countertops I need to put in there. I was just blown away. I was like, how can you possibly know all this stuff? How do you have all that information? And then I realized that we're just an extension of his vision, right? We're helping him get his vision complete. We're part of the puzzle. We're just one part, right? Once the building's built, then we're gone. Yeah. We're done as architects.
Uh-huh.
So about 2 or 3 years into actually working, I said, you know what? I want to be that guy. I want to be that other person on the other side of the table. So ended up going back to grad school to do that. So I went to NYU's Master's in Real Estate Development Program.
I mean, that's NYU obviously is a good, you know, brand name, but how'd you pick going from Florida to New York?
I love my undergrad. I loved it. FAMU was amazing. But it was a small college town. So for those of us in the building business, it was like everything we studied in school was so abstract because we couldn't see it, couldn't touch it. So I said, when I went back to grad school, I'll go somewhere where I'm fully immersed into it. So I looked at NYU's program, obviously. I looked at the University of Miami's program, which was still pretty new at the time, and a USC's program, and their program was actually pretty good. But NYU's, based on what I saw on their website, it was just much more put together. And that was ultimately why I made the decision. What I didn't learn until I got there was just the network was incredible. I didn't factor that into my decision-making tree. But once I got there and I was in, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Especially if you want to work in New York City. It's a fantastic network. And just about every level of the real estate business, from capital, construction, to building, to private equity, to lending, it has tentacles in just about every component of the business.
So there was a point in my career where I was thinking about getting back into real estate, like on the deal side of real estate and development side. And so I was looking at all those programs. And yeah, I mean, NYU's been around, I think, since the 90s, maybe, that program. So one of the first real estate as an asset, an institutional asset class is kind of, much newer than
correct
a lot of them. And so these programs are pretty new. So, now everyone's trying to catch on, Georgetown and
right.
There's a ton of these programs now at Johns Hopkins.
There's a few around the country that are now giving real estate specific degrees.
So what did you acquire there that you didn't have prior to the network?
Well, what's great, I don't want to give away too much of the secret sauce, but your first semester, you take finance and you take law. So law class teaches you the vocabulary, teaches you the whole language. How can you sit in a room and have an educated conversation, right? Knowing about, takings and encumbrances and, all these kind of high level finance terms, IRRs and net present value. And then in the finance class, you learn how to use tools, not just what is debt and equity, but how do you use it? How do you use leverage to get a deal done? And here's all the different types of debt products. Here's all the different types of equity providers. Here's what those equity providers are looking for. So that's like your base level when you first come in. And then from there, you can kind of branch off into your specialties. So I think, for NYU, I can't speak to all the other ones, but it gives you that solid foundation. So everybody who comes out of the program, there's a basic foundation that everybody anticipates people have coming out of this. So when you interview an intern in the industry, you understand all right, at a base level, they know this amount of information.
Gotcha. And are you still heavily involved with that school?
So I am. So I'm, I think in my fourth year now teaching at NYU.
Professor.
Yeah.
Regarding the legal terms, Mickey's an attorney, so maybe she can speak to this too. And I was at the NMHC convention over the weekend. And I was talking to someone I knew there, and he was running acquisitions for a pretty big shop. He's not a lawyer, but how much of his time is spent reading legal documents? It's 80% of his time is just going through legal documents. So that's an extremely important skill set, I imagine.
That's why so many really good developers come from a law background. Contracts can make or break you. So you're exposed to a lot of risk, right? You have all these different relationships that have, potential downsides. So if you don't know how to manage all those risks, one or two of those can wipe you out. So having a good lawyer to protect you from the downside. So the upside's great. We make money. Being protected from the downside, that's hey, if you don't make money, I'll take your house and your car and your business.
Yeah, so I could definitely speak about that. My dad is an entrepreneurial developer who didn't go to college. And he was like, I got to marry a lawyer, a real estate lawyer, because I don't want to do this.
That's all.
And a lot of the way they kind of balance each other out is that my dad will come up with this visionary idea. And my mom and me, and there's another attorney that works with my dad, who basically it's our job to point out the risk. And then we have to figure out which ones are worth taking, which ones aren't, and then make it work in reality. So I think that lawyers annoy the shit out of business people, because it's our job to tell you why this is a bad idea. What are exactly where all your potholes are. And when you're an entrepreneur, you don't want to know about the pothole. You just want to get it done.
Right.
But I think having both sides is good. Having both kinds of people on your team is good, because then you can kind of come to the middle.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, you need a lawyer on your side. Definitely it helps that, that person. Yeah.
Right. And particularly as Mickey just mentioned, is having somebody on the team, because it can be expensive, you know, using outside counsel all the time. But having somebody inside to help you structure deals and structure transactions is incredibly helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've said this before, but my uncle is an attorney. He became a developer. I think a lot of attorneys get bored of being an attorney and they're like, what can we do? And they probably put some of their money into real, they probably put some of their money into real estate by now, you know, like they have extra money. What am I going to do? And start investing in real estate. And they're like, oh, this is kind of exciting.
Right.
You know, I've been at NYU job fairs and I know real estate is still, it's not like a banking role where you're like, there's like, you know, it's much more laissez-faire recruiting stuff. Wow.
Correct. That is true. That is true.
So like as a firm, so like they don't, there's not like a whole lot of outplacement or, you know, through interviewing at Goldman Sachs, there's, it's a very structured process. And what was it like for you coming out of school?
Right. You got me personally, I worked at entrepreneurial firms. So, you know, I sought out some firms that I thought were a good fit for me. And, you know, one in particular, you know, they were entrepreneurial and they were looking for somebody with somewhat of a design background, which is helpful, and also the finance background, which is helpful. But I just reached out to them directly, short answer. So yeah, it's a lot less structured, especially in entrepreneurial offices. There's not like, you know, a HR department that's going to like have this whole like super formal, like crazy system, because the firms are so small. The director of the company has much more input on the team members on the firm, because development firms tend to be small shop.
How'd you find them though? I mean, it seems like a lot of people I know are trying to find real estate jobs, entry level real estate jobs, seem to have, at least from my experience, have a hard time. It's like they don't know where to go or how to find these people. Or,
well, it's cyclical, right? So doing it in 2010 is different than doing it in 2015. So it is cyclical.
Yeah.
This particular firm, I mean, for me, just speaking of my experience, they were doing affordable housing. So I had design experience in affordable housing. So it wasn't completely random, right? It was like, oh, this kid kind of sort of knows what's going on. And he's got this degree that he's about to wrap up. So it wasn't completely random for me. But like cold calling a firm that like, you know, I like reached out to like a private equity shop in like Fine Eye right now. Yeah, my eyes wouldn't be that great. It's just cold. And then I'm just with thousands of other applicants, you know?
Yeah.
So one of the things I tell my students is like, figure out how you stand out from the pack, right? Because you're competing with every kid at Penn, Princeton, Harvard, MIT. They're all trying to get the exact same job you're trying to get and looking at. How can you stand out?
Yeah.
So some people are lawyers, like Mickey. Some people are construction folks. And for me, I was a designer. That was kind of my thing that differentiated me from a lot of people, was that I was an architect on design and I knew how buildings come together.
So who did you work for after NYU? Like, tell me about your kind of career progression.
So I worked at Janus Properties, a small developer based out of Harlem. And then after there, I worked at this firm called Silverstone Property Group, which is, it's a sister organization of Madison Properties. So I was there, I was construction manager there. So that was actually different than the first firm, which I was dealing much more with the asset, existing assets and some of the existing renovation. Versus at Silverstone, it was much more of a construction management position. So physically, how buildings are coming together, managing contracts, managing PCs, you know, cutting checks on Friday, running out the job site, doing recs, much more straightforward construction. And then I came here to Carthage after that. So I came to Carthage with experience managing buildings in Harlem and experience managing GCs. And so that's what differentiated me when I came here, is that, oh, he knows how buildings come together. He knows how to finance it. He knows how to manage the construction. You know, there's not a whole lot of people that have, you know, each of those skills. So that, you know, as it stands today, is kind of what differentiates me.
Well, you know, Mickey's the queen of networking, right? She's the queen of New York networking. Right. She's more than New York.
That's all.
When she met me at an event, she met the last guy we interviewed at the pool.
So we are part of this organization called National Realty Club. So Mickey is a new member there. And that we met through that real estate networking organization.
So like one of the themes I'm finding for people in whether it's getting deals done or progressing in their career is you got to be out there, right? You got to be out of that.
Oh, yeah. It's a relationship business. You have to go out. You have to meet people. You never know where that new deal is going to come from or the next job is going to come from. Again, what I didn't know going into grad school was that I was going to instantly be plugged into the matrix of that network. So for folks who don't go to grad school or don't get a secondary degree, yeah, you really have to work it. You really have to work it to stand out from everybody else, because for every seat, there's 10, 20, 30 people who would love to be in your spot. So how can you hold that spot, stay there and thrive?
And National Realty Club, largely because of Gerard and other people who have relationships to NYU and other universities, does have a special program for scholars who want to start networking while they're in school with the lower dues, and they contribute in work products to the club. So if that's something that you're interested in, you can reach out directly to one of us.
Right.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them have a lot of like ULI and like a lot of different organizations have like a tier membership where it's like if you're a student, you pay less. And there's a lot of sort of like not underground, but like almost sort of secret clubs in real estate, right? You got to get on a secret email list. Once you get in, people start introducing you to people. I get a lot of calls from like attorneys or people with no real estate experience, and they're like, can you help me find a job? And as a recruiter, I can't really help them because no client's going to pay me a fee for somebody with no experience. But, you know, I just tell them, you got to get out there. You got to find out the organization. Yep. Like Google's an amazing, has a lot of power. Just Google stuff. Be out there.
Agreed.
When you do go, you know, come in positively, be nice to people, contribute, help the groups. And the more you help them, the more you'll get invited to more. Because like you can't just go in expecting everyone to help you if you're not going to help others too. So I think come in with a giving attitude.
Agreed. Like what subcommittee can I be a part of? How can I add value back to this group?
Gotcha. So tell me about Carthage a little bit. What do you guys do there? I mean, you told us initially, but where are your properties? Are they all in Harlem or are they?
So all in Harlem, a few in Brooklyn. We're doing one project in Brooklyn right now. And then we have a few properties out in New Jersey in the Newark East Orange area.
Oh, cool.
And are you? Yeah, we're actually working on stuff in the Newark area too. I mean, tell us about the properties. Are they large, small? Are they, what's your business plan?
Again, the original business plan was preserving and developing workforce and affordable housing. So in Jersey, we do much more preservation. So we're trying to buy existing assets. In New York City, we're trying to do more value add. So, you know, basically ground up construction, because buying existing assets, profits are very small. So that's currently, you know, kind of our focus. And in particular, above 96th Street is where we kind of have an advantage that, you know, we know the comps, we know the neighborhood, we know the politics, we understand the financing structures. We know the subsidies and state and the city monies that are allocated specifically for us. So that's where we have a particular advantage. So that's our focus.
What's the biggest difference between like investing, developing affordable housing compared to market rate?
Oh,
market housing.
Massively different. So the biggest difference is can't flip it. So typically when you receive public subsidies, you have to maintain the building affordable for some period. Sometimes it's 10 years, 15 years. Sometimes the building has to stay affordable for 30 years, but maybe you as a landlord can refinance or sell it in 15 years. Also, typically in affordable housing, you get subsidies on the real estate taxes, so you don't have to pay as much real estate tax. Typically, there's a second and third mortgage that's available to help prop up the costs. And then diving into the actual assets, the compliance is a much bigger task. So versus just a market rate apartment, like you sign somebody up for a lease, you look at their pay stub, they're cool, they move in, that's it. But in affordable housing, in many cases, you actually have to do what they call a compliance process, which is every year making sure that person still is within an affordable housing bracket, so that they get a job at Goldman Sachs next year and they make $200,000, they're no longer getting this publicly subsidized building. So the federal government wants you to check in every so often because you got the tax break, you got the subsidy, you may have gotten the land for cheap. They want to make sure those who need it are receiving. Another very big difference is you typically have a much smaller equity need for affordable housing versus a market rate. You typically have to leave a good slug of cash into the deal, at least in New York, versus affordable housing. Yes, you'd go in with a very low basis. And once you get your developer's fee, you typically get a very nice, substantial return on investment. I made that all sound nice. Very easy. That is all
incredible. That's
easy. It's very hard. There's a lot of lawyers. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of begging the politicians. So I made that sound like so easy, like you can go do it tomorrow. But that's essentially how it all works.
Well, it sounds great, man.
Well, we kind of touched on this a little bit in how you tell your student that they should find their way they stand out. But do you have any other advice for students or young people in the business that you would want to give them or that you would have wanted to know when you were at their point in their career?
So a guest lecturer gave one of my students this advice, and I always give folks this advice now. Save early. One of the things that he didn't do in undergrad was save, so that when you get out into the working world and an opportunity comes up, you could actually jump and take advantage of an opportunity. So being ready, I think I would tell undergrad folks and graduate students to try to do that. Try to live beneath your means, save your money, so that when an investment opportunity comes up, you can potentially participate. Networking, as you guys know, is important. Getting out, meeting people, knowing people, this relationship business, you can't do this on your own. You need somebody who's in the lending business. You need a good lawyer. You need all these different relationships. If you're looking for a job, you know, trying to cold call is incredibly difficult versus having somebody you look up to or a mentor or a friend who can refer you. I referred somebody today, actually. Somebody texted me 3 days ago needing a part-time analyst. And completely unrelated, one of my ex-students emailed me yesterday looking for an internship. Made a connection. So
hopefully you're not too good, then I'll be able to follow up.
Yeah, join our team, Gerard. We want you.
Oh, man. But getting out of network, I would tell young people, like, get out, meet people, get your name out there, get informed so you can have an informed conversation with folks.
Do you have any mentors?
My first mentor was my mentor in architecture, this gentleman named Alan Wolf. He's awesome. Gave me my first job. He was an alum of my undergrad. I was in a design competition at school. He was one of the judges. And just randomly, we were chatting in the back, and he mentioned that he was looking for somebody. And I was like, I'm looking for a job. So he's been awesome. He's like a father to me. So he's awesome. He actually tells me that I still need to get licensed. I said, let me make a little money. I'll get back to it. And then on the real estate side, I've met a couple really, really awesome folks who give me advice over the years. Two, I'd say right now, Scott Robinson. He's also a professor. He's in the capital raising business. He's awesome. And he gives me tips and advice over the years. And then another good mentor of mine is Steve Hornstock. I mean, he's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guy. So he's been in the real estate business many years. And he actually is also an alum of NYU. I met him at a young women and men's real estate luncheon years ago. So for whatever reason, he took a liking to this young kid.
It sounds like you put yourself out there, you know, in that competition, you raise your hand, you know, you just take the leap and build the parachute on the way down, kind of.
Basically, I definitely came to New York without a real solid plan B. Like, this has got to work. It's got to work. Luckily, it worked.
Any sort of books or podcasts that you really like?
First of all, I'm a massive advocate of audiobooks because I don't have as much time to stop to read, but at least in my commutes, I can still consume good information. So I'm a big fan of audiobooks. So Rich Dad Poor Dad is a good one, which teaches you about business and kind of the separation between business and education. A lot of us are raised to think that education alone, the whole mindset that like school alone isn't going to do it for you. That you really need to actively engage and learn about money and business aside from your education. So that's a great book for that foundation. I'm a big personal finance nut. So one of the first books in that journey was this book called I Will Teach You How to Be Rich. Yeah, it's a great book. Young guy, and it's great for young people too, to basically help you set up your whole financial system, which I actually still follow for the most part. But basically it teaches you how to put your financials in place so that you'll have money for your bills, have money for saving, have money for investments, and have money to go do fun stuff. And then he was a proponent of making sure you do that, having that balance. And if your expenses are too much for that, then you need to reevaluate your income and your expenses.
Yeah, no, it sounds like that's great advice for everyone, actually.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. We're grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com.